From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear an interview with Phyllis Barber, award-winning author of 9 books, including Raw Edges and How I Got Cultured, and winner of the AWP Prize for Creative Nonfiction. She has received awards for both her fiction and nonfiction, and has published essays and short stories in North American Review, Crazy Horse, and Kenyon Review. She has been cited as notable in the Best American Essays and in the Best American Travel Writing. In 2005, Phyllis Barber was inducted into the Nevada Writers Hall of Fame. She lives in Park City, Utah. The Desert Between Us is a sweeping, multi-layered novel based on the U.S. government's decision to open more routes to California during the Gold Rush. To help navigate this waterless, largely unexplored territory, the War Department imported 75 camels from the Middle East to help traverse the brutal terrain that was murderous on other livestock. Jeffrey Scott, one of the road builders, decides to venture north to discover new opportunities in the opening of the American West when he and the camels are no longer needed. Jeffrey arrives in St. Thomas, Nevada, a polygamous settlement caught up in territorial fights over boundaries and new taxation. There he falls in love with Sophia Hughes, a hat maker obsessed with beauty and the third wife of a polygamist. Jeffrey believes Sophia wants to be free of polygamy and go away with him to a better life, but her motivations are not so easily understood. She had become committed to Mormon beliefs in England and had moved to Utah Territory to assuage her spiritual needs. The death of Sophia's child and her illicit relationship with Jeffrey generate a complex nexus where her new love for Jeffrey competes with societal expectations and a rugged West seeking domesticity. When faced with the opportunity to move away from her polygamist husband and her tumultuous life in St. Thomas, Sophia becomes tormented by a life-changing decision she must face alone. When we spoke, I began by asking Phyllis Barber to talk about the U.S. government program that brought camels from the Middle East to help people navigate the American West during the Gold Rush. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
The government history of bringing the camels to the United States was started when they needed to establish different routes to California because everybody wanted to get to California and the gold. And this was about 1857, 1858. So the government looked at the southernmost route, which was through Tucson and Apache country, which was very dangerous for the people going west, and also the Donner Party was happening in the northern route, so they needed a middle route.
Right.
And they established that. They wanted to investigate from Albuquerque to Needles to see if that would be a good route. And so it was a very waterless place, and that's why they brought the camels over. And Jefferson Davis was actually the Secretary of War before he resigned to be involved with the Confederates.
Yeah. Now, and they brought 75 camels, you said.
That's what I read somewhere, and I hope I might.
Well, no one's probably going to challenge you on it now. So how did you learn about this?
I heard there were camels in the Southwest, and I mean, somebody just said they sighted a camel in Texas as late as 1950. But somehow I heard that and I thought, camels in the Southwest?
Yeah.
And I've got to find out about that. So I started doing some research and I loved the story of how they came across the country.
Yeah. So your main characters are Jeffrey Scott, who's a road builder who never joined the military to fight in the Civil War, but his attitudes align with the abolitionists. And then there's
right.
Sophia Hughes, who's a young Englishwoman who has converted to Mormonism and left England to join a polygamous settlement in Utah Territory. So that they were such interesting characters, and I wondered if either of them was based on a historical figure.
Well, I had a great-great-great, I think she's three greats. I had a great-great-great-grandmother who actually was part of the settlement of St. Thomas, which was that
yeah.
Mormon settlement that later became part of the state of Nevada. Anyway, and she was married to a very angry man. So those were my historical prompts.
Okay. Wow. So when you were developing their characters, did you just kind of start with her but let it become completely fiction? Or did you have old journals or letters or anything that you leaned on at all?
No, I just started with that idea that I just told you, and then I developed it from there. And I mean, I have read a great deal about polygamy in the Mormon culture and the early days. And so I used some of what I had gained from that reading and that study.
Yeah. Okay.
But Jeffrey Scott is totally fictional. You know, he's somebody that came out of my imagination.
Oh, he's great. Let's see. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about writing about Mormonism, which I know you've written a lot about, and also about the subject of polygamy in this book. Talk about writing those subjects.
Well, it's a very difficult thing to write about it because it's a complicated issue, and everybody looks at it very, I think, a little bit simply.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a much more complicated issue. And Mormonism, I've been involved with it since my birth, even though I left it for a while. But I mean, that's my take on life.
Yeah.
I learned through that particular lens. And so to write about it is not easy because I'm not the spokesperson for all of what Mormonism means, but I just have my little slice of the story,
mm-hmm.
you know, and how it happened and how I perceived it. Like, I grew up in Boulder City, Nevada, and there were a lot of people who had helped build the Hoover Dam who lived in that town.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to use right wing or left wing, but they were very conservative in their thinking and very adamant about patriotism and all those kind of things. So
right.
A lot of what I would have thought and written about has been shaped originally by that. But I moved to Las Vegas, which made me ask a lot more questions than I had asked before.
Yeah. Okay.
My writing about Mormonism is my questioning of it and also acknowledging that it's had a big effect on my life.
Yeah. Now, another layer of this book and another character in the book is a native named Kwan Yumai, they call him Kwame for short, and he's a Mojave. And, you know, I wondered about, you had to, I'm sure, research so much and know about so many different aspects of history and culture and America in this book. So I'm wondering, you know, how you came to create his character, but also, like, how did you figure out how you wanted him to speak and present himself and be on the page?
Okay, first part of your question, how did I come to write about it, was the expedition that was taken for the original Route 66, which was that military expedition.
Right.
Across Mojave land, Mojave territory, mm-hmm. at the end. And so the Native Americans became very, and I have a friend who's a part of a pueblo in New Mexico, and he said he hates the term Native Americans, but
you know, it's funny. I remember David Joss used to say that the people that he knew preferred the word Indian, you know, for their own culture rather than Native American. So I don't know. It's interesting.
Right. Well, my apologies to anybody who doesn't like the term, but I will use Indian.
Okay.
But anyway, the military expedition ended up in Mojave land, going across the Colorado River, and they'd done a lot of farming there and a lot of agricultural, but using the river and its tides, not as tides, but its ebb and its flow to grow their crops. So they became a part of the book. And then I read a book that's, I think it's called The Last Camel Charge, when it said that the people who were building the road had to get back across the Colorado River. And that's, there's a whole scene in my book.
Yeah.
But the camel charge said that these camels frightened the Indians away because they were so big and they were so powerful, you know, and it was like, whoa, these are beasts that they'd never seen before.
Sure.
So that's how the Mojave Indian became a part. And I did try to visit the reservation now and some of the people and talk with some of the people. And we had great conversation, but they wouldn't say anything about their tribe. They said, you have to talk to the elder. So anyway, I just did the best I could on that one.
Were you able to talk to the elder or not?
He was not there when I was there, and I was only there for a few hours, so I did not get to talk to him.
Okay.
But there's not a lot of writing done on that particular tribe, so it was a challenge, and I had to be careful that I didn't fall into cliches about Indians, and I tried very hard not to. And again, if I did, I apologize.
I didn't see any that looked at all cliched. So now I would say, Phyllis, that The Desert Between Us is a love story in addition to all these other things. And I wondered how it was to be writing a love story.
It was really fun.
Yeah.
And I had to go back into it and back into it and back into it, because it was like at first I didn't want Sophia to be involved with Jeffrey Scott. And then I thought, you know, she's very much alone and her husband's gone all the time delivering mail. And so that was where I ended up. And it was, again, it's not a part of the Mormon religion that anybody would have an affair. But I think a lot of people did. A lot of women did. And a lot, especially women in polygamy. They ran off with the soldiers or whatever, because it was like they didn't like that lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, and she is even further isolated by being away from her home country and away from an atmosphere that she's familiar with, and has kind of found herself in a completely foreign place to her. So I could absolutely see the loneliness eating away at her. Now, Phyllis, as you researched the various aspects of this story, the camels, the Native Americans, the early Mormon settlements, the gold rush, I wondered where you turned for source material, and did you have any particular research finds that excited you or maybe changed the book? Like, did you run across something that just really helped you a lot?
The May Stacy Humphreys, I think that's his name, the Harvard published some journals of this military expedition, and some letters were sent to the government to report on the expedition. So Harvard has a collection of those, and I read those, and I really found them useful. And then I read The Last Camel Charge by Forrest Bryant Johnston. That really was an exciting thing to me, because reading about all these camels in the Southwest, which I had not known anything about before.
Yeah.
How they actually frightened the Indians in this particular incident.
Yeah. Did you know where you were headed as you wrote the book? I'm always curious about how much plot comes to authors as they work, or some like to know ahead of time how the story will end. Where do you fall?
Well, I'm not impressed with my approach, but I always just kind of feel my way through. And then the thing grows from there. But I mean, I had, this took a long time to put together, because you do a lot of research and then you think, well, how do I want to present this in a book? So I rewrote it quite a few times and reordered it. So I did not know from beginning to end how that was going to work out. So a lot of it just happened as I was writing along, and as other people would read it and they'd say, well, what about, I mean, for instance, Charles Wesley Hughes, I think that's his name. He was a very angry man, but when the University of Nevada Press read this, they said, he really needs to be more angry than he is. You know, you need to show that on the page a little bit more. So I did do that at their suggestion. But so I wish I was a neater writer. I'd say I'm kind of messy. And I just find my way through it, by the shirt tails or whatever.
Do you work on more than one project at a time, or are you usually pretty focused on one thing?
Well, if it's like a novel like that one, I would just work on that at one time. But if I'm doing essays, I might work on one and then I might work on another. I'm working on a book of essays right now, putting together a lot of the ones that I've published, and I'm writing some new ones. So that's been fun. But So I'm working on several at a time.
Yeah. Now, the author photo on the book jacket shows you with a camel. So what's the story there?
Oh, I had the most fun with that. I went to something called the Chris Kindle Market here in Salt Lake City. And and there was a petting zoo, and the man had a camel. And I was going, wow, because I wanted to get close to a camel because there are not that many of them around. And so I set up an appointment to go out to his petting ranch out in Grantsville, Utah, petting zoo. And I went out there and had a photo shoot with the camels. And he was just marvelous. I really enjoyed that experience.
Yeah.
So that's where the camels came into the picture.
Okay, great. And while I'm talking about the book jacket, I am curious about what the source material is for the cover. Is that a photograph from that period or is it a painting? I couldn't quite tell.
Well, it's not a photograph, but it looks more like a drawing painting.
Okay. It's great.
When I first saw it, I said, well, those are Bactrian camels, and I wrote about dromedary camels, which only have one hump. So I tried to solve the problem by saying that there was a mix-up, and I don't really know. I thought there were some dromedaries, but anyway, they're camels, and they're fabulous animals. And when I was at the petting zoo and met a camel, I was like, wow, these are big animals.
They are big.
They really are.
It says on the credit for the cover image that it's from Vischer's Pictorial of California. So it must be, authentic in some way, I would think.
Oh, yeah, they did find it. And because I was so surprised when I saw it, I thought, wow, this is really phenomenal. I like the cover a lot.
Yeah, it's great. The book starts out in the present tense, and I wonder if you can talk about the decisions you made around tense.
Okay, I wrote it in the present and the past. The reason I chose that was because I was switching in time periods, I made the present tense in St. Thomas, Nevada, when all the major stuff is going down. But then I had the past tense when she was in England and working for the hat makers, and also a past tense for the camel expedition. So that's how I worked with it, was so I could. But then I also included dates of when it was happening, so maybe I wouldn't have needed it. But I did change it once to all past tense, and I did not like it as well.
Let's see. Another small point of the sort of format is your decision to head each chapter with titles like The Visions, The Disruption, The Uneasiness.
Right.
Not all of them begin with the word thee, but I enjoyed these and I liked considering what each was referring to before I read the chapter. It was kind of fun. So did you come up with that idea, or was that something your editor suggested you do?
No, I came up with that idea, but I was going to number the chapters, and I thought, that's just boring. and part of it was why I wanted to order it for myself. So I put those titles in, and then I added the considering the other subtext with it. But it was a project that took me about 7 or 8 years to complete.
Yeah.
Some days I'm illuminated and some days I'm not.
Let's see. There's like an afterword in the book that talks a little bit about the actual history of St. Thomas, the polygamous settlement that's depicted in the book. And I wonder if you can share a little bit of that with us for listeners.
Okay. Well, from 1865 to 1870, the Mormons established St. Thomas and sent a lot of people down there. And they were practicing polygamy at the time, so it was a polygamous settlement.
Right.
But the settlement only lasted for 5 years because Nevada, well, first of all, people thought that St. Thomas was in Utah territory. Then it got changed to Arizona territory.
Right.
And then the surveyors from Nevada came in after it was made a state in 1865. And they came a few years later and they said, I'm sorry, this is part of Nevada. So, and then they demanded taxes in gold and silver from those agrarian people who had no money. And so they just decided it wasn't a good idea. So they all left.
Yeah.
So, and then St. Thomas, about 10 years after that, some people came in and inhabited the houses that were there and built up another community, but it was not a religious community at the second time around. And then in 1935, the Hoover Dam was finished in 1935, and then Lake Mead was formed, and it basically put St. Thomas underwater. So
yeah, that was interesting.
People had to leave it again. It's really an interesting town, and now you can go hike. It's not underwater anymore because Lake Mead is way down, and but you can hike out there and see some of the foundations of the school and things like that.
Wow. Let's see. I wonder if we can talk about the importance of salt in the book. Salt mining is less exciting than gold prospecting, but Jeffrey Scott muses at the beginning that it's more valuable than diamonds, and that was just another thing you had to know about. So I wonder if you can talk a little bit about the salt.
Well, I don't know if somebody told me this or I read about it or what. I really can't remember, but that there were natural salt mines around St. Thomas, the natural I don't even know what the formations would look like, but they could go out and they could chop big pieces of salt away and then take it into the town. Originally the salt lick or whatever it's called that was near St. Thomas was used by the Mormon settlers.
Okay.
But the Mojave Indians knew about it too. I remember when I was a young girl, I was born in 1943, but the dam was very young then. But I remember hearing there were a lot of Indians in that area where the dam had filled in with the lake.
Yeah.
So it had displaced a lot of people.
Yeah.
So anyway, that pretty much fascinated me. But the salt, I wish I knew more about it, but I know that they did have access to salt. And then Jeffrey Scott decided he would take it up to the miners up in Pioche and further up north in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
I think it needed for the mining processing as well as for consumption.
Let's see. So I always like to ask my guests for advice for writing. And in your case, I wonder if I can read a couple paragraphs and then we can talk about something I want to ask you for advice on for listeners. Is that okay? All right. So this is, I don't know, it's more than halfway through the book. This is from Sophia's point of view. Looking out the canvas door, she sees very few neighbors standing or working by the side of their shelters, their tents, their primitive houses. Very few are busy with hoes or rakes at this hour. No straw hats bobbing, or skin reddening or blistering for that matter. The sun glares overhead, close to noon and the hottest heat. The wind is starting up, so predictable. Sophia takes a few steps outdoors where the sun beats like a drum on her hatless head. She feels like a stretch of dried animal skin pulled across a bent piece of wood, rolled into a circle of sorts. Her hair blows one way, then another, lifts up, blows to the left, strings itself across her mouth, into her mouth. And it goes on from there, but I wanted to ask you, because I just think it's very interesting to fill out the details of setting in a way that brings the character into the setting, and I think you do that so well. So I thought I would ask if you have any advice for listeners about writing setting, but maybe also thinking about that aspect of it.
Well, I will say that I grew up in Boulder City, Nevada,
right. So
I grew up in the desert. And so I had a lot of experience with the desert and the wind and the sand. And actually, Boulder City was a better community than Las Vegas. Las Vegas was much windier and much more windswept. So, but I wrote a lot of that out of my own experience of the desert. And sometimes waking up in the morning and having it be a big windstorm and having to, there's so much of the desert that I brought to it from my own knowledge of growing up in that. And I think that's one of the secrets of using setting is really being familiar with it.
Yeah.
So I know that doesn't always please everybody to hear that.
Well, but, yeah, it can be hard if you're writing about a place you've never been. So that's
true. Yeah.
Well, listen, I want to mention again, the name of the book is The Desert Between Us, a novel by Phyllis Barber, published by University of Nevada Press. Is it Nevada or Nevada? I never know.
Well, people in the West say Nevada and people in the East say Nevada.
I'm not going to worry about it then. Phyllis Barber, thank you so much for speaking with me today about your book.
Thank you, Shayla.
This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers, and that was an interview with the author, Phyllis Barber. You can learn more about her work at phyllisbarber.squarespace.com. You can also find a conversation I had in 2009 with Phyllis on the podcast site writethebook.podbean.com. Phyllis Barber kindly suggested a Write the Book prompt for us. Go to your writing desk first thing in the morning when your mind is fresh and not bogged down with tasks and duties. Doing this, writing first thing from the lip of your mind, as Phyllis puts it, writing fast and not editing yourself, can be so useful. Set down whatever idea comes without worrying if you'll be able to use it. Just have fun. Let your morning brain liberate your creativity. Good luck with it. As we live through this unique period in history in which the entire world is basically in isolation, I hope that you're able to read and to write. If possible, I hope you're able to support authors by attending their online events, reading their blogs and virtual book tours, and finding your way to their books. If you are interested in sharing this show with out-of-town friends, please let them know that archived episodes of Write the Book are available on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Google Play, all the places where podcasts can be found, and also on writethebook.podbean.com. You can visit Write the Book on Twitter and on Facebook for updates. You can also access the podcast at my own website, shelaughswithoutus.com. From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3 WBTV.org. Stay healthy. Have a great week.